It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
My guest today is a New York Times best-selling ghostwriter who has decided to author her own memoir after being a storyteller for others. Nancy French's new book could easily be a movie or a series after learning about her challenging upbringing in the foothills of the Appalachians, where she experienced and witnessed extreme poverty, abuse, and violence. Despite being a college dropout, she found incredible success and happiness writing about other famous people. And during that time, she moved to New York and married someone she barely knew, which turned out to be an enduring love story she loves telling others about. More recently, Nancy discovered that she has cancer, and she's been battling with the disease simultaneously as she prepares for the release of her new book called Ghosted. I've known some of Nancy's story, having followed her on social media for many years now, and I'm always inspired by her encouraging, funny, self-deprecating humor, her love of family and of pickleball, but also as an advocate sharing her life experience to help others. Please welcome the author of the upcoming book, Ghosted, Nancy French, to the Janice Dean Podcast. Nancy French, it's so nice to talk to you. I feel like you and I have been friends on social media for many years now.
Yes.
And so congratulations on your upcoming book, Ghosted. I definitely want to dive into that. But I first want to talk about your diagnosis of cancer, which you've been sharing on social media, which is so brave of you. How are you feeling?
You know, I'm in the most brutal form of chemo called the Red Devil, and it is appropriately named, I have discovered. But it sort of has a cycle. So like I go through like a week of being face down in a mattress and then I'm okay-ish. But I am, you'll be happy to know, keeping up my pickleball skills. So I do get out and try to play. So like I'm trying to make the most of it, but it's been pretty awful.
Tell me about this journey. How did you discover you had cancer?
You know, in November, December of last year, I got a call. I found a lump, did the, I just from self-evaluation, went in for a mammogram, had more lumps than I had detected, and it had already gotten into my lymph nodes. So for about 2 weeks, they, you know, had cautioned me that I could have been, you know, riddled with cancer and this could be the end. I do have a very aggressive form of cancer. And so it's just been a tough road, but it's been about 3.5 months and I'm just very thankful to be in the situation that I'm in. I think the chemo is working. You know, I'm bald as an eagle now, but I'm just, you know, thankful that hopefully I'll have another chance at, you know, life and a longer life than I'd previously, you know, worried about.
Mm. How did you discover? Were you somebody that, you know, did regular breast exams?
I think I did one, Janice, and it was that one,
man.
Honestly. Yeah.
So are you an advocate? Are you trying to get out there to tell women that they have to, you know, make sure that they're taking care of themselves and their bodies?
Maybe I should do that. I do try to be candid about the journey. And I think once or twice I've mentioned it. But yeah, it's so important just to pay attention to your body, you know, and to notice the changes and to, you know, just pay attention and be your own advocate, you know, because finding that lump, you know, like the next day I had a mammogram and then we find out it's this really aggressive form of cancer. You know, I shudder to think what would have happened if I hadn't found it.
Mm. Do you have breast cancer in your family?
Yes, I do. My mother has it even at this moment. But we did the genetic testing and it's not genetic. It's not like we don't have that BRCA positive genes, which is interesting. So yeah, I encourage also that genetic testing because that gives you a lot of information.
Did your doctors, when you went for appointments, I mean, did they tell you that you should, you know, be aware of this?
Yes. We've sort of, and that's the thing. I feel like I've sort of paid attention because of my mother's diagnosis. She had it at 51 and then she has it again. I've paid attention and I still, you know, I still have it. I guess we're not omnipotent, or all knowing, but, yeah. So it's like, I'm sort of conscientious about it and I feel like, you know, I just happened to find it. So anyway, I'm very thankful that I found it.
My goodness. Well, thank you for speaking out and being open and honest about it, because I feel like when we do these things, when we come out, when we have a platform and we talk about things that are going on in our lives, it does, you know, it does help others. So I thank you for being open and honest about that. And I really, truly hope that the treatment that you're having is going to be helpful. And I pray for you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yes. One of the most surprising things is I sometimes post pictures of myself when I'm bald, and I get so many messages from women who say that they went through cancer and they didn't even let their husbands see their bald heads. Oh. And I just feel sad about that, because I'm not incredibly in love with my current vibe/look, but also we shouldn't be ashamed of our bodies. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I want people to sort of normalize being a little eccentric and different. And, you know, so, but I love all of the feedback I get from people online. It's been very encouraging.
It's awesome. That's when social media is great.
Yes. And who knew? Who knew? Like, ever since that people found out I had cancer, everyone likes me and they're so supportive.
Well, I think through adversity, you know, that's when people kind of, I'm not sure. It's almost like it helps people connect with each other. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think even if we're mad at each other, if we realize that someone is going through something, we can put the stuff aside and really connect with them as human beings, which I think is a beautiful thing.
Yes, I think it's, and there's something about adversity and trial and suffering where you just see people differently. Like, I'm so uninterested in people's political positions right now. Like, I just don't even care. It's so uninteresting. But I have really loved all of the cancer support that comes from different ideologies and different political parties and, you know, different faiths and different socioeconomic backgrounds. Like, it's just something that plagues everyone. And when you can unite in that suffering, it's so beautiful to really connect with people there. I'm very thankful. This is going to probably come off strange, but like, there's beauty in this diagnosis.
Yes.
I'm not thankful that I have cancer, but there's so much beauty to be observed. And I feel like when people get cancer, everyone sort of rushes them to the cure or the healing. You know, like, people are constantly giving me tips on this is how you need to do this. And I do want to be healed. I want to be cured. I want this to be over. But right now, I feel like it's sort of important not to rush people through this journey, because there's beauty and wisdom to be observed and gleaned from it. And so hopefully right now I'm in that process. I'm going to be just so awesome by the time this is over, spiritually elevated and wise and still bald.
But you're somebody that has been through a lot of adversity. You've had a lot of challenges in your life. And so tell me about this book that you decided to write called Ghosted. I'm interested in the title. Is it because that you were a ghostwriter for many years of your career?
Yes, it's sort of a pun. So I've been a ghostwriter for a long time, but also I think more personally for readers, have you guys ever heard the term ghosted, like when people ignore you and they don't return your text?
Yes.
I feel like the ghosted sort of does double meaning here, because I feel like I'm the person who has all of these communities that should have embraced me and supported me through various issues, but sort of and ghosted me. And this book is for all the people out there who feel politically, spiritually, culturally homeless. And I think that's probably more of us than we know. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people out there during this time of political acrimony who are just like, I don't know, guys, I'm not sure which way to go or where to be or where's my tribe. So the ghosted idea is for people who are tribeless.
Mm. I like that. Have you always had an idea in your mind that you've wanted to write this book and it just took up until this point to do it?
Well, I fictionalized it once And I'm a failed novelist times three. I've literally written three books that I can't sell. But I've always wanted to be a novelist. But I did fictionalize this once and I tried to sell it and I couldn't sell it. And I'm thankful because I think it's important. I think that process was important because it was the first step emotionally to sort of breaking open some of these topics. But I'm very thankful to just tell the, you know, the actual story in a nonfiction memoir. I'm not sure I ever thought I would. Because, you know, I at some point, you know, it's like, well, what do you say in a book that you haven't already said, you know, in other ways? But I haven't really told my story. So I'm very thankful to be able to sort of lay it out for people.
What was the hardest part to write about?
I investigated a camp in Missouri called Kanakuk. And that process was very difficult. It was a 3-year process. There were a lot, so much abuse, and estimated hundreds of boys abused. And there were girls as well. Many predators. I've been told of like 16 suicides. That was very heavy to write, just as the investigation was heavy to conduct. But the Kanakuk thing was probably the most challenging because I wanted people to understand it, but it's just such a gigantic topic. I had to be very sparse with the details. Additionally, it's just such a heavy topic that when I went in to read the book, I kept crying. Because I knew what would happen to some of these kids, you know, but it wasn't appropriate to be emotional while I was reading my Audible book. And so it took me days to record, you know, to get that right. I just kept crying. At one point, I was sobbing so hard, like I literally sobbing, like I made noises in that microphone that they could probably put on YouTube to get a million clicks to identify like what creature created that. But at one point I called the producer of The Moth, who lives in Sweden. The Moth is a New York City like storytelling organization. I went to the bathroom. I called her and I was like, I cannot say these words. I'm so distraught. And she like talked to me. I had our speaker next to the toilet and she was like, okay, this is what you need to do. And so with her help, I was able to get through that chapter. But I think that was the hardest one other than the chapter that related to my own abuse. There's a lot of bad stuff in there, but there's hopefully a lot of lighthearted stuff in there too. But there was a lot of hard stuff.
I was just going to say, I think that chapter obviously brought up issues of your own abuse as a young woman, as a child. Were you able to process this before you wrote about it?
You know, I'm still processing it, I think. But yes, I've been in counseling for many years. And when I wrote in 2016, a Washington Post piece that deals with my sexual abuse, I had not processed any of it. Mm. But now, this many years later, When Gretchen Carlson first brought me news of the Kanakuk investigation, I said in my mind, or I said to David, I was like, I don't want to do this under any circumstances. I don't want to know about abuse. I don't want to think about it. I definitely don't want to investigate it. But then I realized, because I'm almost 50 and I'm an older person who has a responsibility to younger people. And I feel like in my church abuse, there were older people who knew about it and did nothing. And so in my moment of testing, when I was asked to investigate this terrible situation of child abuse, that was my inclination too, just to not deal with it. Because I've never been to Branson, Missouri. My kids don't go to camp in Branson, Missouri. You know, why should I investigate this? And plus, I'm not an investigative journalist. But when I found out about it, it was like someone had given me a weight. And if I can't, as a grown woman, deal with this topic on the behalf of children, then that's quite the shame. And I felt like I could not be like incredulous that no one intervened on my behalf if I wasn't willing to intervene on other people's behalf. So that was the impetus for me actually dealing with my own abuse and other people's abuse at the same time. I wish that I had been more progressed because that process was so awful. I felt like I was just sort of like battling death the whole time, not only the deaths of the people who have died through suicide, victims and even one predator, but the victims that would hear about the investigation perhaps for the first time in a long time. And would that be triggering to them? And then I dealt with my own issues because, you know, in my past, I have all of this darkness. And so it was the most important thing I've ever done and the most difficult.
Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
How long did it take you to write this?
It may have taken maybe 6 to 8 months.
And wow. That's quick.
Yeah. Well, I knew you were going to say quit because I've written, my spiritual gift not listed in 1 Corinthians is quickness. And I have written books in like 1 month. I know it's crazy. I think my record is 24 days and it was a New York Times bestseller. It's crazy. I know. And I'm a college dropout. Like I never learned how to write. So I just write quickly. I have so much fun doing it. I love it, but I'm super fast. So this was a labor of love. It was very difficult to write.
You say that you weren't educated to become an author. Where do you think that gift comes from?
You know, I think that Southern women are natural born storytellers.
Yeah.
And so I've always sort of had like this flamboyant ability to spin a tale. I've always loved that. Like I've always wanted to be a storyteller. But I wasn't that great at school. And so I never graduated. I quit college 3 times. But that desire to tell stories has always been there. And I do that through art and writing and books and essays. And even the investigative journalism is telling a story. I've told moth stories, which are just oral storytelling. And I just love it. And I'm so thankful to be able to do that as a job. I just feel so thankful. And I just love it.
What do you want people to take away from this book?
I want people who feel like they don't have a home to feel connected to other people who don't feel like they have a home. I feel like one of our main political problems is loneliness, and we can cure that. I don't know how to fix politics, but I know that once we connect with people, we can love them in ways that we thought was previously impossible. And I just want people to feel encouraged, even if they do feel politically, spiritually, religiously isolated, that they're not truly alone and that this discomfort is sacred during a time of just terrible political acrimony.
Mm. What is your faith like today?
Oh, sister, I am hanging on to Christianity by my fingernails. Mm. And the reason is because I've investigated all of this church institutional abuse, and I'm so sad at the way the church has responded. But I love God so much. Like, I really do. I feel like Christianity and church culture, it's like I'm trying to hold on to it. To the degree that maybe we shouldn't hold on to some of that. But I feel like God, I feel complete trust in God. I feel thankful that he's been with me every step of the way. I feel thankful that he's given me a family. You know, I married this practical stranger 28 years ago, and he's the guy who's helping me with my chemo treatments. You know, like I'm so thankful to have what I have. And I know that God has orchestrated this sort of windy path to where I am. But I just feel very thankful that I feel very trusting of God right now, even as I distrust some of the cultural institutions related to Christianity.
Wow. You talked about your husband, David. You know, give us that love story. That's an important part of your book.
Yeah. So I am married to David French, who you might know writes for The New York Times, and he's a columnist, and a lot of people hate him with a hot burning passion I'll never understand. And I'm a little bit over that, by the way. But he is so great. I met him and we hit it off, and we like on the second date, I decided I would marry him. I decided that I would never tire of listening to him speak because I found him so fascinating. And at the time when people were very upset that I was marrying a complete and utter stranger, at the time they laughed and they were like, oh, that's young love. You guys, that'll wear off. That's not what that's not how you make these decisions. And I'm sure that they were completely right to be reticent about marrying someone that I just met. But we were married within 3 months. And I was right. I have never tired of listening to the man speak. He's still smart. He's still fascinating. And to all the haters out there who tried to get us not to get married, I see you.
How did that meeting happen?
Oh, well, you know, I got letters from my church, a deacon intervened, David's friends had an actual intervention at their house, you know, and they were all right. We were completely asinine. We were like, we don't believe in counseling. We believe in love. And, you know, like, and I literally quit college 3 times because I got married and then I got pregnant. Like all of the things that they thought would happen that were their worst case scenarios happened. And also I'm still so thankful that I did all of the things.
Yeah. There is something very important about having a spouse that supports you in every way possible. I wish every person had that. I have that, and you have that. And I just feel like we really can get through anything. I've told the story many times before, but when, you know, Sean proposed to me, it was one of the happiest days of my life. But the thing that I remember the most is when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2005, I remember him saying to me, "This doesn't scare me." And that, in so many ways, was more important than the marriage proposal, because it's like you're going to go through something that's unknown, that is, there's no cure. I could be in a wheelchair at some point. And for him to just say that was like, I just was able to take a deep breath and be like, okay, he's in it. He's in it for the right reasons.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And also not, and to that spirit of not being afraid. That's such a freaking gift, you know, like that he was able to sort of give that to you. I know it wasn't a total transference, but, you know, just having people who are there and are steady and are there and are there and are there and are there. It's just such a blessing. I cannot believe that I, you know, I've been through a lot of hard things, but my current family situation, like my son came home from college to help take care of me, even though I told him not to. He completely, completely ignored me to help take care of the cancer stuff. You know, like I just have such a great support system and it's beautiful to see and it's actually empowering to receive it. You know, like I'm just very thankful.
Do you think you'll write more books? Do you like being a ghostwriter for other people?
So I do. I love it. So ghostwriting is probably not considered the most sophisticated type of writing, but I love ghosting. I love my clients. I love hanging out. I like seeing their places. I like going to their exercise locations, to their church. I like eating their food and drinking their coffee and learning their stories. I feel like it's such a sacred opportunity to be able to sit down and like hold someone's story with them. I just love it so much. And I feel like God writes our stories. So like we're not actually writing our story. So it sort of takes the load off. And so you just get to sit back and observe what's happened in a person's life. So I love it. I'm not doing any ghosting lately because of the cancer diagnosis, but I think that ghostwriting is awesome and I love it.
Your book could be a movie. I mean, is that something that you would entertain?
Oh, we'd have to see if Angelina Jolie is available for my part. But yeah, sign me up.
Do you let your husband read your stuff?
Oh, yes. He reads everything. And I usually get the Audible version of his articles. You know, like he'll come down and read it to me or, you know, we pretty much read almost everything that goes out.
And what about your connection with your family? Are you in touch with them, your mom, your dad, your family members?
Yes. My mom and dad are rock stars. I wrote this very difficult book and I drove over there and had to tell them that I was writing this difficult book that had difficult things in it. And my parents, who are 84, you know, I had to tell them I was writing it. And I said, I don't want your permission. I want your blessing. I wanted to honor them in this. And we had the most beautiful conversation. It lasted 3 hours. We talked about all of the hard things in the book. And they were so supportive and so loving. And, you know, they're, you know, self-described, self-identified hillbillies from Monegal Mountain. And they showed such compassion, such wisdom, such beautiful parenting, even at age 84, that I'll never forget the conversation. It was one of the most beautiful 3 hours of my life.
Oh, my goodness. Are you able to talk about that childhood trauma that you experienced as a young girl?
You know, with them, that was the first time. This was just recently. So this was the first time I've talked to them, right? And I'm almost 50, about it since it happened. And that was very healing. It was like laying down 1,000-pound weight. Mm. But typically, I don't talk about it much, but I feel like I've shifted in that. Like, I feel like the process of writing the book and the years that have passed and also counseling has allowed me to talk about it without crying. But also being able to like be an investigator on behalf of other sexual abuse victims has allowed me to see myself more compassionately, because I would deal with, you know, all these beautiful, courageous people who'd been abused at that camp. And I saw them for what they were, which were amazingly resilient people with incredible fortitude. And once I was able to see them that way, I was able to see myself that way, just because I realized that I was just carrying around shame that I didn't need to carry around. And so the process of advocating on behalf of others sort of liberated me myself.
I love that. That's so beautiful. Do you feel like, you know, the book comes out April 16th. Do you feel like you're jumping off a bridge a little bit? I remember when I came out with my memoir, Mostly Sunny, in 2019, there was stuff in there that I had not shared with many people. And I just felt anxious about that. Once it was out there, I was like, okay, you know, I can't do anything else anymore. So how do you feel about that? You know, you're going to be sharing really intimate stuff, really shocking things. You know, tell me about that. Is that going to be a relief? Is it tough? What's going through your mind?
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I probably have a little trepidation, but it's so much less than it could be, because when I started writing it, I was like, my hands were shaking. Mm. But then when you get a cancer diagnosis, you're like, oh, well, I could die. So, you know, if people don't like chapter 17, who cares? You know, like whatever. And I think there's something to that. But additionally, so many people talk trash about me and David online, and they speculate and they mock and they whatever. I've never told my story. So my approach to all of the people out there who are criticizing us is just always I've tried to respond civilly. I think I have. But generally, I just try to respond to people with love and just not tell the story. But I'm very thankful to be able to tell the story. You know, like, I don't take it for granted that it's hard to get a book deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm a ghostwriter. I'm not a celebrity. And yet I got a book deal, and I'm very thankful for the opportunity to sort of explain a lot of the criticisms. People have criticisms. Some of them are legitimate against us. And so I, you know, just sort of want to unpack it in a way that's longer, so that's not just like, you know, however many characters, to explain the story. And I've made terrible mistakes. I've done bad things. I've done good things. I'm a mixed bag. You may or may not change your opinion of me, but it's just nice to be able to tell the story. Mm,
I hear you. There is something, I hate the word cathartic because it's used so much, but there is something that's very, you know, freeing about being able to tell your story and not just in, you know, on social media and little blurbs and pictures and that kind of thing. Are you optimistic? You know, I didn't want to talk too much about politics because we're so inundated by it, and I think it's so divisive. And are you optimistic? I know a lot of people are just like cringing and just like, oh my goodness, where are we going?
No, I'm completely despondent and in despair over the politics.
At least you're honest.
And I have no answers, no solutions. So I'm just leaving all that to David, but I'm just like completely confused and gobsmacked.
Yeah, but you know what? You just touched upon something that I think is really important, and that is you've been touched by cancer. Those of us that have had, you know, major challenges in our lives of a diagnosis of something that makes us realize our mortality, that life is short. The most important things in our lives are not necessarily what we're looking at social media. It's our family life, our kids, our family, how we feel about ourselves, taking care of ourselves and each other. There is something to that, you know, that one moment where you're in the doctor's office and he delivers bad news and you're like, wow, all the other stuff just washes away. It doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. You're just present in the moment and you're holding on to the hand of your spouse or your family member and you realize what's truly important. And I think more people need to realize that, you know, that we're not here for a very long time. And how do we want to live the rest of our lives, even if it is just for one more day?
Yes. And I feel that so strongly. I feel so much more present. And additionally, I don't know, I won't speak for all women, but I have always battled like insecurity, like, oh, I'm too fat, or oh, my hair looks bad, or oh, I'm self-critical in this way. But this cancer diagnosis, I feel like Oprah Winfrey with my self-love. I'm just like, oh, you know, my body is playing pickleball. There's nothing like walking onto the pickleball court completely bald because everyone is like, they're like, I'm like Andre Agassi or something. They're like, oh, yes, you're so good shot, Nancy. But you know, like I feel like I can receive all of the love that I'm getting and I feel so much differently about myself. And I feel thankful for my body that is doing atrocious things to me right now. It's betraying me in every way. But I'm just thankful for it. I'm thankful for this sort of newfound, I don't know. I feel like my whole life, maybe many women have this experience where you just feel so self-critical and you can sort of gas yourself up for a Tuesday or a Thursday. But by Friday, you're like, oh, I don't feel good. I don't look good. I'm not good. All of that is gone. I am celebrating every victory. I'm thankful for every success, for every night's sleep, for every eggs meal that I can get down. I'm just thankful for all of that. And I'm just also thankful for the opportunity to be able to connect with so many people going through hard things. It just gives you such a beautiful perspective.
Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this. Nancy French, it's just been so wonderful to talk to you. And I, you know, I'm praying for you and I really hope that you come out of this stronger and, you know, and better. And it brings tears to my eyes because I just love the way you think. I think, you know, I guess people say it's about the attitude, but I really do believe that. You know, I do. I think if you have a good attitude and you get up and you put 2 feet on the floor and you realize what's important and what your gifts are that day, then, you know, that can get you through the next bad thing.
Yes, I agree with that. And I actually, in a moment of candor and confession, should say that my cancer navigator did reprimand me for my terrible cancer attitude at one point. Because this was during the 2 weeks where I thought I was going to kick the bucket imminently. And I needed 5 minutes to adjust to that. But, you know, I was saying things like, God is in control. And if I die, I die. But I'll go, you know, I was going to go to chemo. It wasn't like I had this desperate sort of like, I wasn't going to just die. But that was not enough. And my cancer navigator was like, I've seen people die from attitudes like that. And I was like, oh, okay, sorry. It's like, I just need a moment, you know, but it did take me a bit. So I feel like I have a relatively good posture now, but that's after having been reprimanded by the people at Vanderbilt.
Well, that's important. I mean, that's good advice.
I think so too.
What is, you know, your perfect day? What's your perfect day?
So I love to play pickleball in the mornings in my neighborhood because all of the neighbors go down there and it's just like you get to meet people and talk and the community is so beautiful. And then I love to create art. I picked up art over COVID. So I love to paint and I use acrylics. And so I love doing that in the afternoons. And pretty much with my current chemo schedule, I can do like 2 things optimistically. But I love to read books. I love to paint. And I also have a healthy TV habit. So I'm always watching TV at night. I love watching shows and Netflix and Hulu. I belong to all of them and I love all of them.
I do too. I love sitting there with my husband. We're watching Shogun right now. The new one.
Oh, is that good?
Oh,
okay, I haven't seen that.
It's so good. I mean, do you remember the one? Do you remember the one with, what's his name back in the 80s? Richard Chamberlain, right?
I never
watched that one, but I had heard about it. And my husband read the book by James Clavell, obviously decades ago. But visually, it's spectacular. The storytelling is amazing. So if you can sit there with David and watch that, it's amazing. It's so good.
Oh, wow. Well, okay, I've got one for you, but you're going to be so addicted to my TV taste if I tell you this show, because it's so good. It's called Catastrophe on Amazon Prime.
I've heard of it. Yes, tell me.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, like there are two people who hook up.
Yep.
This is the premise. This happens the first 2 minutes. And the lady gets pregnant and they decide to marry each other as perfect strangers. And so you can see how that would resonate with me. though I was not knocked up, let the record show, because as everyone speculated at the time. But it is a beautiful show about marriage. And all of the vicissitudes of life. It's the most beautiful show about marriage that I've ever seen in my life. And this is in the context of a raunchy hookup comedy type scene. But the whole show and series, it shows the value of commitment and just being there for each other. And it's beautiful.
I love that. Yes. Well, I mean, I need more recommendations. So let's be in touch.
I've got them, sister. Yeah,
I love it.
Oh yeah, I got the whole thing. I think I have 55 series that I can recommend. So
really? Okay. Well, we'll definitely talk after this podcast. Well, listen,
you have to prioritize your TV, you know, like you got to really, I've invested in it. I don't want to shame you guys for not watching enough of it, but it's a golden age.
Oh, I agree. I think, you know, I know people say there's too much out there. There's too much selection. We're giving too much money away for all the, but I love the escapism now more than ever. It's like, you know what? I just don't want to hear about, like, you know, the next whatever on the horizon when it comes to government or politics or the terrible stuff. I mean, we have to pay attention, right? It's important that we pay attention to the headlines. It's important to be aware, but it's also really important for our own health to be able to escape, you know, and be able to, like, just take a beat because it gets to be too much.
It really does. And the storytelling is just so amazing right now that it's just really fun to be distracted by, you know, some of these crazy stories. Mm. It's so fun.
Yep, I agree. Tell me how people can get your book.
So I think on April 16th, it'll be available everywhere books are sold. So you can go through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore or your brick and mortar, and hopefully it'll be there.
Mm-hmm. And what's your, you know, how much are you going to do publicity for it?
Yeah, so I'm just saying yes to opportunities and hoping that I can physically do it. Mm. So it is so unfortunate that this book is coming out when I am bald as an eagle and battling the most brutal form of cancer and chemo, or the most brutal kind of chemo. I'm sure there's cancer that's much worse than this. But I'm very thankful that for some reason, does this sound naive? This probably sounds naive. For some reason, I feel like they were supposed to happen simultaneously.
Yeah, I get it. Yep.
Yeah, maybe, because, yeah, there's something so empowering about having a book, and there's something so weakening about having a disease. And together, I think it's quite beautiful, because I'm just thankful. I'm just freaking thankful that I have this book and that I'm going to say yes to opportunities. And I'm trying to plan them like 10 days after the Red Devil chemo. Unfortunately, the book comes out on April 16th and my Red Devil chemo is on the 17th.
Oh, man.
So, well, y'all better like it, because I can't respond to anything you say.
I think bald is beautiful. I think you are beautiful. I was just thinking, you know, about all that you're going through after you've written this, you know, this memoir that is just... You're burying yourself, like you're naked in this. Like, here is what happened to me, all the bad stuff, the good stuff. And here it is. And now you're going through another challenge. I remember when I wrote Mostly Sunny, at the very end of it, I was like, oh, everything's awesome. Look at what I'm doing right now. I'm going to the Kentucky Derby and everything's sunny. And then boom, the COVID-19 pandemic hit. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I believe in just like wrapping things up with a bow, because that's not the way life is. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. Like, here's my book. But you know what? I'm on another chapter here that's still writing itself.
Yes, and I think one of the messages of the book is throughout adversity and tragedy and trauma that I felt like God was just directing my path. And I feel like that now. So I feel like the cancer diagnosis, a lot of people are like, how did this upend your life? And it did in almost every way, except that I already felt taken care of. I already felt like God was directing my path. I already felt like I could trust him. And this is no different. And I'm just thankful for that. I'm thankful to have been in the place where I already felt situated. I already had a support system, but I also had a faith that could, you know, just, I don't know. I know that a lot of people have faith and that this is probably boring, but the way that God intersects with us is so confounding. The way that he deals with us is so baffling. And a lot of times when you're going through these hard times, you're like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Like, actually, what is happening? What are you trying to, are you trying to kill me? Are you trying to get me to give up? Are you trying, you know, and you just have all these feelings towards God where you're just like, what is happening? And in my book, I talk about sort of taking that 30,000 foot view of your life and being in looking at those patterns. That's what I do as a celebrity ghostwriter. Mm. When I talk to my celebrities, I'll look at the patterns of their lives. I'll hear the details. And then I can see their lives as a whole in ways that maybe they can't. And so having that person there to, like, you know, objectively look at the story is important. And so I was thankful I was able to do that for my own book because I was able to see how God had moved in various ways to make things work out or not work out according to whatever plan he had, that to which I was not privy. Yeah. For some reason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm thankful for that.
Yep. And there is something very comforting knowing that we are on a journey that's already been decided for us. You know, I think right. It's taken me up until this point to really give into that idea. Like, you know, I'm doing the best I can to be the best mom, the best wife, the best person I can be, but my destiny is already there, you know, and I have to go on this journey and just trust in God, a higher power, my faith, to get me through it.
Yeah. And how does that, how did that affect you when you finally relented to that idea? Was that empowering or did you feel sad about it or how did you feel?
No, it was a relief, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's a relief when you realize that it's already decided for us. We just, in the time that we have on earth to try to be the best person that we can be, go through those tough times, be able to also feel sorry for ourselves and be angry at that, but also know in those quiet moments, like, okay, we're here right now. We don't know for how long, and how am I going to make the best of it? You know?
Mm, yes. And that's a question that we should all ask. Yeah. You know, because we all are dying, you know, like, you know, I corrected myself previously when I was like, that's when I thought I was dying. I think there's something so beautiful about recognizing death and having it sort of close to you, because it allows you to make better decisions.
Yes.
You know, like Ben Sasse in his book, his most recent book was talking about the importance of buying a cemetery plot.
Yeah,
he was like, wherever you are, buy a cemetery plot right now. And it seems macabre, but, you know, Christians and Stoics and people throughout history have this idea of memento mori, which is remember that you must die. And you'll see that in art, you know, like the skulls, you know, that seem to be misplaced. There'll be like a king with a skull on a desk or wilted flowers or an hourglass. But they put in that memento mori so that you could remember to live better because time is short. And I feel that so much. I've never felt more alive than I feel right now with this crazy cancer diagnosis. I feel brimming with creative energy and a zest for life. Now I might be face down in the bed for a week, but I feel alive and I'm thankful.
Yeah. I think we need to talk more about death. I think that's one of those things that we just sort of like bury in our subconscious, but I think we need to talk more about it, you know, because then it takes the stigma away a little bit. And yeah,
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, there's something so uncomfortable about it. was sort of wrangling with, should I just be bald for this whole book thing? You know, should I just be bald, and or am I being prideful to have a wig for the book launch since the book's not related to cancer? You know, I've wrangled with all of that. But I think there's something about the discomfort of death. Like when I walk into a place and I'm bald as an eagle, people have to, it's like they, when they realize it's cancer related and not just a fashion choice, they're confronted with their own deaths, or their Aunt Mary who died of cancer, or their husband who died of cancer. And so I'm a walking memento mori. Remember that you must die.
Yes.
And so I am so socially, I feel like I'm a little bit socially awkward. First, I cry a lot. Now I don't have any eyelashes, so it's awkward. And by the way, you lose your nose hair, which you don't think performs a function, but your nose runs perpetually. Yeah. So I feel socially awkward, not only because I remind people of their own mortality, but also because I just, you know, jacked up on steroids and, you know, emotional because of all the physical stress. But I just think it's important. And you, with your MS, it's the same way. I feel like we need to rethink how we think about disease. You know, and because I think there's so much to learn from people going through it, but we're so uncomfortable. It's not like we can't even have good conversations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I salute you. And whatever you decide to do, wig, hat, no wig, bald, you're going to crush it. And I'm so proud of you, Nancy. And let's be in touch, not only to give each other ideas for books and series on television, but, you know, I wish you all the best. And I hope people do pick up this book, because ultimately, you know, it's a tough read. But I think the end of it, there's optimism.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to finally connect with you in this way. And I'm a huge fan. And thank you for everything you do.
Thanks again to Nancy for spending time with all of us today. I'm sending all my love, strength, and prayers to her and her family as she valiantly battles cancer. Throughout it all, she is a calm presence in a sometimes chaotic world. And her book is called Ghosted, An American Story. And it's available April 16th. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.